You're listening to Asheville FM at WSFM LP 103.3 Asheville, and I am joined in the studio here with the editor of the Asheville Blade, the one and only David Forbes.
Always a pleasure.
Thank you so much, David, for joining us. And we are doing what we like to call our City Council Report, which we recap the most recent City Council meeting that took place on May 22nd of this past Tuesday. And David, you and I, we've been doing this for, I want to say, a couple years now. And there are certain meetings where it's more or less kind of business as usual. This was not one of those. So I'm actually not even quite sure where to start. So I think it's important maybe to kind of start with some of the context in terms of what happened in previous meetings with Code for Asheville. And there was a specific movement, dare I say a filibuster, for you civics nerds out there. There was a filibuster from the community in terms of what they were requesting. So can we start there in terms
sure.
of what the heck happened?
That's why we're saying linking all these issues, and there were a lot of them, were issues around the way that law enforcement's handled in Asheville, around racism and around police brutality. And that was kind of the core of this meeting. And there were some major different issues that came up. But I think what you saw at this meeting was it was clear that that public pressure is a much bigger factor in city politics than it has been since the past, especially public pressure against what people see as kind of an unresponsive city government, especially on those issues I just mentioned. And that it seems to be moving to council. Like, you saw a lot more active council than I've seen in many, many years, despite some opposition from some on council and from some city staffers, and certainly from the police. You definitely saw some of these kind of community pushes going on for a while, years in some cases even, really kind of the momentum kind of built at this meeting, and a lot of stuff happened. I think even doing filibuster is a really interesting place to start, because it shows how people are kind of becoming more involved in local politics, because this is something that took a fair amount of planning. And basically, there is a bevy of items called the consent agenda at the beginning of each meeting. Usually these are non-controversial things. One might get pulled out for some discussion. A housing incentive got pulled out from discussion this time. But in general, they're put on that because they're really minor steps that council legally or for oversight reasons need to sign off on. But they're probably not expected to attract any debate.
But there is a public comment available right after the consent agenda.
At that point. And if people want to weigh in a public comment, generally an individual gets 3 minutes. On a single item, they can weigh in on a separate item later. But they get 10 if they have three people signed up to give their time to them.
Correct.
And in this case, with some activists who were supporting Code for Asheville's push to get a lot of more police data, things like use of force reports or use of force data, citizen complaints kind of opened up, and what they think will help produce some more accountability. And full disclosure, the Asheville Blade has endorsed this measure. We believe it's a pretty key step to ensuring some really basic accountability in the people's government, basically. So, but in this case, this came up at the past meeting. A lot of council members expressed some support, but city staff said they wanted more say in what did and didn't get released and how it got released. And
something that you and I spoke about in terms of kind of like process, procedure, et cetera. You and I spoke during our last city council meeting, or city council report, that a motion could have been made.
Yes, and that's actually what the activist demands end up being. They're like, look, you need to, council needs to basically stop messing around. We've seen this stuff get bogged down in process too much. You have the authority here. Make a motion directly released to the public. It doesn't preclude, you may have to make a few legal redactions under open records law. These are open records. They basically need to be released. We need to stop delaying this. So Kim Roney, former Asheville City Council candidate, longtime activist on some of these issues, trans committee member, was one of the organizers behind this, and spoke first, kind of said the demand, and then read, in this case from a book of poems about Asheville, in this case poems by Dwayne Barton, who's a longtime Burton Street resident and activist.
I will also say she brought in a massive notepad that kind of wrote out
with the motion.
With the motion.
It was a really interesting kind of way, because it required a fair amount of knowledge of how the inner workings of government and the agenda you could actually do this. And then each person that spoke for 10 minutes, and there being two, and reading from various books, the second person read from
Kurt Vonnegut, Man Without a Country.
Yeah. So, and it was interesting, kind of
a favorite of mine, actually.
The room changes was so out of what's expected for a council meeting.
Specifically the consent agenda.
Yeah, but the fact is, the point was made. It was an effective tactic, because after the second speaker finished his 10 minutes, then Councillor Shanika Smith, who has been pretty critical about the lack of open data, another important point of the last meeting was that council themselves expressed some frustration that they didn't see this data being produced,
and
didn't feel staff were moving fast enough.
Yep.
But they stopped short of ordering a motion, and this time they did. Council member Shanika Smith, who's been kind of a critic and of some of the ways staff have dealt with this, is more transparency is needed, more connection to the public is needed, made the motion. And then it kind of bogged down some procedural back and forth for a while, because the motion technically called for, that Roni proposed, technically called for a policy, and actually what it was within a policy is the council would direct the release of these data sets.
Mm-hmm.
So it went back and forth, and in kind of a shock vote, actually won its initial vote, 5-2, Vice Mayor Gwen Whistler and Councilmember Vijay Kapoor. And this has become a theme throughout the night. We're opposed to this. You know, said this was moving too fast, wasn't going through the right process, et cetera, et cetera. But the motion was kind of restated. And it did note, look, if there is a legal redaction to make, and there are a few that can happen under open records law, under state open records law, fine. But, council wants this information released. We are making it formal at this point. And that actually ended up passing unanimously.
Yeah.
So that was kind of an interesting moment of public pressure, kind of pushing council to kind of take this step. And that was pretty key, and that kind of became a theme throughout the evening. You saw these issues the public has really pressed on for a long time. Really kind of come to a head, and you actually saw the public side prove a little more powerful than the bureaucracy at this point.
And we're going to talk about this here a little bit more, but I was coming back from High Point, and I was just vigorously following David Forbes' Twitter feed, and it was some interesting commentary that came out with certain council members speaking about, like, we've talked about this enough. Like, this may be your first time kind of hearing about this, but we need to move forward on this. And so kind of segues really nicely into our next point that I want to bring up and I want to get your mind around, David, is Ian Mance with the Southern Coalition for Social Justice in collaboration with the local chapter of the NAACP talking about written consent, talking about deprioritization.
This actually came from the local NAACP.
Exactly.
And they sought out the SDSJ's help.
Right.
And that's, I think that's an important point to note. A lot of research locally went into this before kind of some statewide help was.
And absolutely. And for the listeners who are maybe kind of tuning in for the first time, this isn't the first time that we've heard about David. So when did we first hear about this?
We heard about this for well over a year. So there, the Southern Coalition for Social Justice, some people involved with that help run a site and have created a site called Open Data Policing. And this basically, this site compiles reports from police departments themselves and compares them to the demographics, the racial demographics and ethnic demographics of an area. And it shows if there is a disparity. If, say, for example, you have a fairly small African-American population, but overwhelmingly your stops are of African-Americans or of a much higher percentage, or certain offenses are, result in a stop more frequently than others. And those for Asheville have never exactly been good, to put it mildly. They show some pretty large disparities. However, it's gotten even worse over the past year. Last year, the NAACP and the SASJ brought this to council's attention. Council members, Mayor Mannheimer, not exactly anyone's idea of a radical leftist or anything, which is, look, this is an emergency. We really need to move on this. There's a sense of urgency about this. And they didn't.
They got kicked to public safety.
Well, APD Chief Tammy Hooper has been very opposed to the NAACP wanted all consent searches, which is where someone, according to the law, to law enforcement, consents at the vehicle search.
Mm-hmm.
And overwhelmingly, there's a lot of research on this that African-American drivers especially feel they can't refuse because of a long history of racial discrimination.
It's a legacy.
Yeah, exactly. And it's a current one, frankly.
Yeah.
We've seen brutally on video recently in this city with the Johnny Rush incident, which hangs over all of this, how that happens.
Absolutely.
And how it was, frankly, you had officers at many levels who were complicit in this were just fine with it until, you know, there was real, some real, the public started really.
There's also some real power dynamics at play as well that think we have to kind of talk about when we talk about law enforcement. This isn't, you know, Blue Lives Matter versus Black Lives Matter. I mean, there is a lot at play when you get pulled or a person of color.
Yeah,
what comes
the
up?
Powers on the side of law enforcement, even if they're not obeying their own rules or law or anything like that.
Right.
So black drivers feel they have a lot of pressure.
Mm-hmm.
And also, there is a long history of kind of minor stops being where a lot of these disparities take place. Things like, you know, a taillight being out or a registration being expired, where officers have a lot of discretion. And Asheville's rates on this were pretty bad last year.
Mm-hmm.
When the reports happened last year, they were mostly looking at the 2016 numbers. But in that time, we've gone from pretty bad to worst in the state. Asheville has some of the worst racial disparities for traffic stops and searches in North Carolina among cities that are, you know, our size or larger.
Yeah.
And so this combined with the Johnny Rush case, where you saw a very horrific instant police brutality capture video, where you saw everyone from rookie to supervisor kind of being complicit. We saw a police chief, frankly, fail to take action, fail to bring this to the public for months and months and months, even though our own policy called for there to be an outside investigation from the State Bureau of Investigation. But that also meant it didn't come up in an election last year. Police power was a major issue. And I'll lay my cards on the table here. I've written in a column, but I think for that and many other issues that Chief Hooper should have been fired a long time ago. Her behavior's been ridiculous in office.
Well, David, I also want to ask, after this presentation from Ian Mance yesterday, Chief Hooper came up and kind of spoke about that. What came up in terms of her defense of why they shouldn't have adopted these policies?
Not much that holds together, to be honest. And, again, there's context here. Hooper put some numbers out there. She particularly paints Asheville, which certainly, like many other cities, has real problems with violence. That is, but paints it as almost this war zone. It's also a really strange depiction to some people. She's used this as a justification for over-policing black citizens before.
The opioid epidemic has come up as well.
But she said basically it was kind of a version of the old excuse, well, what about black-on-black crime, to be blunt. It was. She said, oh, look, it has nothing to do with race, it's just where the crime is. And Mance's point, I was like, look, if you're so over-policing black neighborhoods, which, you know, maybe 12% of Asheville's population is African-American, that's where you're getting most of your, criminal stops and your convictions and everything, maybe that's an issue, too. As a matter of fact, it raises a really, like, equal protection issue under the Constitution. And, of course, if you saturate an area with police, you're going to get more charges. That is not news. But I don't think there was a lot of trust in the room from the public.
Mm-hmm.
Hooper's defenders were really only other members of the police department or advocates for police organizations. Every single person who was critical of this, notably, was white. In a department with an incredibly low rate of African-American officers. And with these disparities, that fact's telling. We just need to be honest about that.
Well, most importantly, how did city council feel about these two very kind of polarized vantage points in terms of to adopt this policy or not?
It was interesting because it was technically coming up for a presentation.
Mm-hmm.
But it came up for a presentation a year ago. It came up for a presentation at public safety about a month ago.
And we've heard different groups speak to this as well. This is not a new thing.
No, this is not a new thing. And frankly, the number of council members had just had it. Council members Shanika Smith and Keith Young specifically were just like, look, we're going to make a motion. We want written consent, regardless of what the chief says. And it's interesting because some of their council members repeatedly would consult with Chief Hooper, you know, would you agree to this, would you agree to that? She basically said that, you know, she thinks that officers need as much discretion as possible, that they, you know, they have body cameras, that means there doesn't need to be a written document. But, you know, kind of the pushback from council was like, look, Councilor Smith said, look, the APD and the city journals are official coming communities with a closed fist. It's not open. They're not offering anything. They're just saying, you know, kind of our way or the highway. She's like, you really have to have something given to build this public trust. Hoover took exception to that, but council just basically wasn't having it.
Yeah.
Councilor Keith Young also pressed really hard on this. He said, look, you know, this needs to apply to personal searches as well, not just to vehicles. You know, you need to get written consent for it. Also, he put a policy in that you don't the APD doesn't need to do consent searches for feeling like someone looks suspicious.
Exactly.
Or, and that they don't do them at all for someone having a prior criminal record.
Right.
Not enough to request a consent search.
Right. So this was kind of folded into three parts, correct?
Yeah, three parts. And also saying, look, formally, and Hooper claims she is de-emphasizing, minor regulatory stops, though we've seen the numbers of those, these disparities skyrocket the time she's claimed that. She claimed that last year, too. So you really are seeing some kind of variation in these stats that are compiled for departments across the state, several states, actually, and what Hooper's saying. That's not the first time that's happened. There was the crime stats she used to justify a budget increase last year. You had open government activists really, and there's a Blade article called Shaky Numbers that people should take a look at that really goes into this, that, those basically got torn apart by activists and were shown to be fairly dubious. So there wasn't really much trust here from the public based on that history. And in the end, you saw some pushback from, Councilor V.J. Kapoor doubted, some of that race was some of the issue on this.
Yeah.
Mance responded that, look, they've run analysis on these collection methods of data. Generally, many, many, many times, race is the factor. It repeatedly is. That is at the heart of this. It's always been at the heart of this. So a number of other council members, like Brian Haynes, who's the head of the public safety committee, said, look, he's like, I've heard this presentation before. Kapoor said, look, this is really new. We need to go back through committee. And Dane's like, well, it just went through a committee.
Yeah.
And so you really saw some of the frustration between council members.
Like, we've done this before.
Yeah.
This isn't new.
Kapoor and Whistler,
yeah.
I think, kind of emerged as saying, look, this needs more process. They're not willing to cross the APD on this. When it came down to it, it was a 5-2 vote, and they opposed it.
The two opposing were
Kapoor and Whistler.
Yeah.
But the policy's passed, and it that does direct the APD to carry this out. And that's interesting, though, because you really saw this really kind of harsh pushback from a number of police officers or people representing police organizations in the room. They said that they don't feel supported by counsel, that they resent any attempt to brook their authority, that they have the right to stop a suspect whenever they want to under the law. And that, saying that, oh, it's not due to race, due to these being high crime areas, which honestly is a term that has a really ugly history.
There's racially charged aspects to that.
Let's be frank, this is a department that at this point has multiple federal inquiries about issues of racial injustice that has an incredibly low, and it's gotten lower, rate of minority officers that you've seen on camera brutality that was carried out by an officer and sanctioned and defended by other officers who arrived on the scene or were on the scene to begin with. And you see these racial disparity rates, and you see data around the degree to which homeless people get stopped for very minor charges. The picture that emerges from this is ugly, let's be honest. And the fact is, to the public, claiming that this isn't about race, it's not about gentrification, just doesn't hold a lot of water for people.
Yeah.
And I think that's the reason why, some of the county council were willing to push forward. They said, look, the public will is kind of on this side. This needs to happen. But you saw people like Brian Magaha of the Police and Ethical Association threaten legal action, saying, look, we will brook no change in the policies for how, to our ability to stop and search people as we see fit. And even though these policies have been adopted by other agencies in North Carolina, those points repeatedly made, Fayetteville, Chapel Hill, Durham,
Raleigh,
a number of other places have adopted these and have for very similar concerns. And so really kind of what you see as I think you're seeing also is a power struggle.
Yeah.
I think especially with the removal of City Manager Gary Jackson's office for almost 13 years, he had a lot of power for what didn't kind of get put forward. But now you're seeing, with him gone, you're seeing more public pressure, and you're seeing a council that's a little more willing to take some of these steps. So that was interesting kind of for what happened, and did so over the objections of Chief Hooper. They'd generally been very deferential to before.
Yeah.
But, you did see, some real pushback from these police organizations who are definitely going to fight this.
Mm-hmm.
And you saw some pushback in council as well. Kapoor said that because public comment wasn't offered on these steps, Young said, look, I'm calling the question. We need to vote on it now.
Wow.
And Mayor Manarapanch said, look, a public on an issue like this is not an official public hearing matter. It's us changing a policy. Mm-hmm. It's a norm we generally do, but, you know, this issue's been discussed a lot before. We don't have to do it necessarily. And Kapoor, however, he said that he felt the vote to support the NAACP police reforms would be, quote, a black eye on this council.
For years to come. Yeah.
Very harsh condemnation.
Indeed.
Possibly out of some unfortunate language, considering the tide of police violence has kind of come up in this. But he clearly felt, look, the process has been broken. This is, you know, this was not the way to do it, not the way to carry it out. But from the other side, the council is saying, look, the usual processes aren't working. They've become an excuse for change. We have the authority to change them. We are. And so I think you're seeing a clash that's not going to go anywhere anytime soon.
Gosh, David, there's so much, right? There's so much to wrap your head around with all of that as it pertains to kind of the tone that was set at the top of the meeting in terms of the community pushback going years back. You know, like I'm thinking Jai Williams in terms of like the community pushback with
the shooting in 2012.
Right.
Or 2016.
The campaign for $1 million for the people versus that of the police expansion.
As well.
And I think there are so many things, and kind of to bring it back, you know, in terms of the contentious nature that not only we saw in terms of law enforcement coming up there saying this runs counter into what, you know, our ability to do our job effectively. There was also what I'm sensing, some of that contentious nature even amongst city council. Did you notice a swing in terms of like how people were voting, in terms of the people, the way in which city council members were kind of speaking to some of these issues that has changed over the last few years?
Yes, and I mentioned before I noticed kind of a swing. There was less deference to Chief Cooper. And some of this, what I think, was that bluntly as an outside observer, as a journalist, her explanation didn't make very much sense. She said, look, you know, consent searches are a very big tool. We, you know, we need to use them. You know, we find drugs, we find weapons. But, you know, Mance had documentation, you know, from the stats that this project, you know, monitors, that the drug is small amounts of marijuana.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, then Hooper claims, well, there's a white powder that hasn't gotten, but it hasn't gone back from the lab yet, so we don't know what it is. But she's claiming, oh, we found some cocaine and some, you know, too. And she says, okay, well, we found weapons. Mance said, look, the entire time you've been in office, you found 3 weapons that, you know, someone didn't have a legal right to have through these consent searches. And keep in mind, council reforms don't stop officers from doing them. They just have to tell someone, look, you have the right, you can refuse, but if you're consenting, I need you to sign this document. And that's another thing that Councilor Haynes brought up. He said, look, you know, there is due to this power imbalance. Someone just saying, even their body camera's on, and that body camera footage is very sealed. Not many people get to view it. Though Hooper was touting, look, we have it on record now. We can see if they were abusing their authority. But they doesn't have a great record on that. Access is heavily restricted. And honestly, we've seen with the Johnny Rush incident and some of the other things, the degree to which the internal checks don't really seem to work very well. And so there's just not a lot of public confidence. And
so there has to be a different level of accountability.
And Haynes was saying, look, you know, why not spell out to the person with a written document, you have the right to refuse this search, are you still consenting to it? And so I think some of that, there wasn't really much answers from Hooper other than just a defense of her authority, a painting of, frankly, many minority communities in Nashville as, you know, these swaths of crime, which aside from, you know, real issues of violence that go on in Nashville, that is bluntly stereotyping. Mm-hmm. And she used it before. She used, you know, gun crime and public housing as an excuse for why an officer in 2017 had an AR-15 around a group of black teenagers in Montford. And honestly, that's paranoia. That is going beyond, you know, any real social issue to a stereotyping of communities, an excuse for over-policing of them, racism. And that's kind of what we're seeing here. And as a reporter, I feel like it's incumbent among us to say that this is how racism plays out in cities like Asheville. I think it'll be interesting. I think also it was interesting that basically Hooper just lost the council.
Yeah.
And I honestly, like, there have been calls for her to resign before. I think it'll be interesting to see if those come back now, because I think a lot of people are waiting to see, is Hooper going to embrace some of these reforms? Is she going to go
in the wake of one of the most horrific incidents that we have seen that made national news?
And she basically just clearly said no. And a lot of the police department that came up to speak kind of, you know, defended her. One said, oh, you need a Officer Loveland, I believe, said, oh, Kelsey's going more ride-alongs. And Councilman Young responded. He's like, look, you know, I'm an African-American male in Asheville. I have been harassed by the police here, by the APD, from 8 to 38.
Yeah.
And he's that age now. He's 38 now. So he was, and she said, oh, well, things have changed. And he was like, no, they haven't. This still happens today. I witnessed
it
today.
You can Google search Johnny Rush and see that.
Yeah.
The same.
And he was saying, look, I have seen some good police officers, but the fact is I've always seen a lot of ones who weren't. I don't see a lot of change in that department. And so I think you've really seen a lack of patience on council. At the same time, the APD has a lot of, you know, kind of is dug in as an institution. There is support. You know, it has these organizations that support it. And, you know, basically literally threaten legal action for even very modest constraints on its the way it carries out stops and searches. So you're definitely going to see a fight that probably ends up in the court.
No kidding. Well, David, I'm pretty sure that you and I could speak to this matter for the next 3 hours because, I mean, it's so deep, right? It's so deeply seated within the racialized history and legacy and culture that is Asheville.
This is not a usually segregated city.
Exactly, right. And I mean, there are so many pieces of this, but there are other things that I do want to talk about regarding the city council meeting. But typically, I kind of plug this at the end. But in terms of this specific matter, where can listeners go to kind of get more of the context, more of like the full picture in terms of some of these issues that have been popping up regarding policing here in the city?
AshevilleBlade.com.
Are there any specific articles?
Certainly. We have an article called The Attack on Johnny Rush, which is written kind of as a primer.
Mm-hmm.
And we also have an article we just put up called Self-Inflicted, which is about we're kind of getting, mostly about what we're about to get into next, which is the budget.
Right.
Which has a deficit or a gap that it was heavily tied to policing and controversial plans to ramp up policing and if that will cause over-policing and more racial disparity. And there's a lot of links to that article to some of the past discussion about this. There's links in there to the numbers collected by the Open Data Policing Project. So a lot of context there. We tried the Blade to really provide a lot of context to readers who can really get the whole picture.
I enjoy the Asheville Blade, and I think for the listeners out there, in terms of your ability to kind of paint the full picture with all the contextualized components, because it's so deeply rooted in so many issues that you're not going to kind of understand the full breadth of it just by listening to one of these interviews. But let's go ahead and segue into that budget hearing in terms of what happened. So did the budget hearing happen before or after that closed session?
No, it happened. And that actually brings up a real big issue and kind of an example. The issues we just discussed show there is pressure for reforms, and still a lot of institutional opposition to them. Note that the institutions I just mentioned, some people, the city staff, the police chief, the police department, the officials who spoke, weren't saying, look, we think there's a different way to do this. They were just saying, we don't think this needs to be done. And I think that that's a big conflict. But interestingly, what you saw with the budget hearing was an example of kind of still how far from a more transparent government, whatever exact way you think the budget money should be spent, Asheville still has to go. I've covered city government. This will be, year 13. So for 13 years, I have never seen a budget that was that lacked this much transparency, that was this hidden, and that they made it so hard for the public to comment. So for some context, Asheville's spending about $180 million on its budget this year. If not the biggest decisions council will take all year, it determines so much about what goes to different initiatives. And they have a budget gap this year. And this isn't unheard of. This happens occasionally during the recession and right after the recession. It happened pretty frequently when you had our state legislature, who are pretty far right wing, start really cutting with abandoned local revenue sources. You know, council together and decide, well, we're losing, this $600K in revenue. How do we make it up?
Mm-hmm.
And local governments at North Carolina have some real limitations. They have some real power, too, on how they do that. But this time was weird because the budget gap is largely self-inflicted. And it extends mostly from two things. One is a very controversial plan. It was really controversial last year when it was first proposed, and when it's this budget will more fully, basically fully put into effect, very controversial now, which proposal to expand policing downtown in the core of the city. And given everything we just mentioned about the previous items, to say that this is radioactive politically, it would be an understatement. It led to more people showing up for budget hearings than I've ever seen last year. You have people packing out committee meetings. It turned out some of the numbers Chief Hooper was using to justify this really didn't help her scrutiny. But in addition to that, she skipped a lot of the budget meetings where she was supposed to present on this. And that's been a common criticism of her. And it came up last night, too. People noted that after the NAACP reforms were proposed and passed, she just bolted from the meeting. She wasn't there to hear feedback from the public. She did the same thing at the public safety meeting. And so lawmakers have always said, look, we have a chief that in time public trust is more essential than ever. You're going to have a functional police department. She just simply doesn't seem to care. Actually is very averse, almost contemptuous of public input whenever it's critical of her or critical of the department. So given that past, that history, we had a lot of people concerned this year again, but it's kind of flown under the radar. So that kind of fueled this budget gap. It's, you know, it's about $1.5 million this year because they cut some things to start putting it into effect last year, the preliminary steps. They're putting that back in. Mm-hmm. That combined with the over $1 million a year that this would be just as a cost period for these additional officers. And then they're giving city staff a pay hike of, you know, about 2.5%. And this is across the board, all city workers. And that may sound pretty straightforward, but in practice, it means that disproportionately, people get a lot higher raises the more money they make. So if you're a rank-and-file firefighter, you'll get less than a $1,000 raise a year. But on the other hand, if you're a, you know, upper mid-level planner, you'll get well over twice that. And if you're a, you know, senior official, like the aforementioned police chief, you'll get more than about a $4,000 raise per year out of this. So disproportionately, a lot of that increase goes to city officials who are fairly well off already. And earlier in April, you had some council members, Councilor Haynes, Councilor Smith, Councilor Young, who generally kind of had some, been against the police expansion, voted against it last year, or publicly kind of made statements against it, they oppose a variety of ideas like, hey, maybe only city staff that make under $50,000 get kind of a raise, and we hold off for the rest. That's a lot of money. It's millions of dollars for that. And then we maybe don't do the police expansion, which would open up about $1.2 million a year, use it for a lot of other things. But that opposition pretty much disappeared in the last two council meetings before this one last night. And I talked to council members, and they said various reasons. Haynes says he was discouraged. Typically in council, people don't have four votes. They don't even bring the issue up. That's clearly changing now.
Yeah.
And I think we've seen kind of the power that even if a group on council thinks it doesn't have support, that by pressing to a vote, it can sometimes find some surprising support. Like you saw Mayor Manheimer and Councilmember Julie Mayfield, who've typically not supported like pushes for kind of broader reforms previously, vote for them now. There's a lot of reasons for that. Partly, I think it's because, and so their own beliefs are certainly part of it. Partly, I think it's because the idea of opposing reforms demanded in some very staunch terms by the local NAACP doesn't read well in a progressive city. That is not going to go well for you politically. So, again, back to public pressure. This, however, flew under the radar. And so this is basically blowing a hole in the city budget. And while they've made up the gap without raising taxes, they're increasing parking fees, they're taking funds out of the city reserves, there's some real concern because it basically took a lot of really popular kind of social justice proposals off the table. You're not seeing much of an increase in transit in any serious way, which has been a big demand.
Mm-hmm.
Later hours or fare-free trains that are more, make transit more accessible. You're not seeing participatory budgeting, which give neighborhoods some direct control over some city funds. That's been a big demand, very popular during last year's elections. You're not seeing an eviction crisis fund, which is an idea that also got some traction last year. Have a fund to help people like not get out of their homes. Kind of a, you know, if the city's going to be building affordable housing or incentivizing building affordable housing, at least make sure people also aren't losing units immediately as much as you can. And that's all being completely pushed off the table. But the budget presentation at the meeting before this was 3.5 minutes. That's unusually short. The police expansion wasn't even discussed. The budget was very hard to find the website until the day before
the meeting.
The meeting last night.
Yeah.
I frankly was, you know, I was appalled at just the lack of transparency. And usually the budget, there's not many public hearings on a meeting when the budget's happening. It's just the budget hearing or maybe one or two minor items. But this time there were several. And it's one thing for the matters we just discussed, which clearly have a lot of public interest and a lot of council debate, you know, council members debating that, discussing it, deciding to take different positions or not. That's government. That's how this is kind of supposed to work. But loading up zoning hearings and other presentations in a meeting when council has this big major public hearing to consider, And then they did an hour-long closed session before the budget hearing came
up. Wow.
So at the end of the day, it was, you know, nearly 9:30, and a lot of people had, especially those who, you know, had jobs to go to or, you know, had to be up early in the morning, had to leave.
Yeah.
And honestly, it's hard not to read this as an attempt to stop what happened last year, with a lot of members of the public showing up being very critical of city government from happening again. Nonetheless, you kind of the divide that we spoke of earlier. A lot of activists said, look, you need to roll back the police expansion. You need to be a lot more transparent about this budget. But you had representatives of the police department saying, or police officials and police officers saying, no, we want this money. And so I think that was kind of an interesting divide that was going on. But honestly, you're seeing the budget go to a vote on June 19th. It's the least public input I've ever seen, when it's one of the more controversial budgets they've ever done.
And just for clarification, you mentioned June 19th. That's when they vote officially on the budget,
correct? Council only has one meeting in June. It's June 19th. And actually, I encourage Asheville's, you know, the people have not been heard on this enough, whatever your opinion is in the budget, go weigh in. There's just type Meet City Council in on the city's website. It will bring up the contact information for council members. Let them know what you think about the police expansion, about the staff pay hikes, about issues that are or aren't having money spent on them. Just let them know. I think this will inevitably be something better if you get a lot more public input on it.
And David, unfortunately, we are running out of time, but what another important thing that came up in this meeting, and as it pertains to criminal justice reform and what have you, is going to be a support, or rather an endorsement, of looking at legislation that would allow complaints around police complaints for the community, Asheville City Council, and a Citizens Review Board to review, to kind of move away from the body-worn cameras.
Well, of all people who complain, we get to know the result of their complaint.
Correct.
Council would get to view confidentially, but they would get to view body camera footage.
And this proved also to be a pretty contentious issue as well.
And then that, and this is them asking from the state that they pass this legislation. It's got an uphill battle.
Yeah.
And they were honest about that, too. The last item was the most controversial. Those first two passed.
Mm-hmm.
They were not that controversial. Or endorsing them anyway. The last one, though, was getting rid of the city's civil service board, which has a lot of power, probably the most power of any board like this in the state, to check penalties that are meted out for city employees. And some people say this has also been used as to, you know, to protect whistleblowers in the past, but a lot of this controversy in recent years has been police officers getting away with some pretty egregious behavior, because civil service board, even when a police chief did step in and reprimand or fire them, the civil service board would step in and reinstate them.
And I mean, it's worth noting that not all cities have civil service boards.
Most cities in North Carolina don't have them, and I don't think any have one that's as powerful. It's been around since the 50s. That was lauded by some police officers who spoke as though it's been around for this time. That was a young chap. I was like, 1953, you know, this is quote-unquote the protection of all citizens. Kind of make the point, the city was segregated then. It really wasn't for the protection of all citizens. The idea is it would be placed by a Citizens Review Board that would have some real power. This is probably going to be the most uphill fight. Even the local delegation of legislators does not agree on this step. And council's going to agree. It passed 4-3.
Oof.
But you had three council members against it, feeling it's a step too far. They felt like better personnel policies would have the same effect and wouldn't involve shaking things up this much.
This probably is not the last time we heard of this either.
Oh, no, no, no. As a matter of fact, it's going – it was noted that even if this has an uphill fight, it's probably going to start a much larger public discussion about kind of do we need a Citizen Review Board that has some more power.
Well, David, there was so much my God. 6 hours. Thank you for providing this service to us. Thank you for kind of – weathering the six-hour storm that was city council meeting. For the listeners out there, obviously we tried to get as deep as we possibly could in terms of a lot of these issues that are anything but topical. In terms of more depth, more coverage, where can folks read about
AshevilleBlade.com?
All right, David, thank you as always for joining us for the City Council Report.
Always a pleasure.